Hello and welcome to another episode of Masala Zindabad, the podcast that ought to have been a book. This is Amrita from IndieQuill.
And this is Beth from Beth Loves Bollywood. Today we're talking with our friend Samrat of SamratSharma.com about the films of 2010.
So welcome to part two. Let's talk about something else. Striker, for instance. I think I wanted to love it a great deal more than I actually did, but I still think it did things that were interesting. And I also appreciated the fact that they were trying to do something different with a small movie by, you know, the whole YouTube campaign and stuff like that, which was smart, I thought.
I loved Striker, and I thought that it was a great, 70s, 80s, very gritty, dingy, dirty masala thing. I really liked it.
I haven't seen it. Despite the fact that it's available on YouTube, I haven't. Forgive me, Striker. Forgive me, makers of Striker. I like Siddharth. I love Siddharth.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. I love him too, and I was really glad to see him. I haven't seen all of his films by any means. His Telugu rom-coms, I don't really care for particularly, even though he is absolutely adorable. But here he was being absolutely the opposite of some of those things and doing a damn fine job of it. I like him a lot. I want to see more from him.
Here's a movie that everybody and their mother has seen.
Enderun.
I think everybody's seen this movie. I'm sorry, but I didn't actually love it. I don't even know if I can say this out loud, but...
Well, if there's anyone who controls the internet, it is Rajini, right?
So it is true.
I liked it. I mean, and it was an experience, you know? It was my first Rajinikanth film of, you know, at all. I'd just seen piles of YouTube clips before then. So that alone is just its own thing, but that you also cannot not talk about that when you're talking about one of his films. I don't think it's a perfect film by any means. It played with ethics a lot more than I was expecting it to, and I was really pleasantly surprised by that. And I liked that, you know, the guy who turns out to be not quite the worst villain, high ground for quite a few of the points in the beginning, which is not something I feel like I've seen in any kind of big blockbustery kind of film, that it wasn't nearly as cartoonish in its sketches of some things as it could have been. But on the flip side, it was horrendously cartoonish in its sketching of Aishwarya's character. I really hated pretty much everything they did about her and had a lot of problems with that. But it's a really macho kind of thing, which we all know is not my cup of tea. But I was perfectly entertained during it and thought about it a lot more than I thought I would. So I have to give it that's worth quite a few stars in my book.
My opinion might not be the most prevailing one on this podcast, but I liked it. Actually, first of all, the key to enjoying Rajini films is to understand them as kind of how you look at manga. They're dealing with really heavy and interesting theme, but to either make it more palatable to the audience or hide it behind allegory, or simply to make it more of a popular cinema than a deeper cinematic experience, they hide it behind caricatures. And caricatures stand in for deeper themes. Having said that, I thought it wasn't wholly successful with all of the themes it was trying to portray, but a film that could juggle so many themes, so many through lines entirely, I was quite a big fan of. On one hand, it was all about man's struggle against the gods, because Rajinikanth, the actual Rajinikanth in the film, was God, and he created man, and man then rebelled against God, and he was poisoned by the devil. Interesting choice of using a red chip there. So that theme was running, and it was as epic as Perseus against Zeus in its thematic overtones. And then it had very interesting things to say about technology and its place on modern day. You know, there's this throwaway scene where Aishwarya Rai is trotting along, and she's like, yeah, ho ho ho, I'm gonna go talk to that villager guy over there, and he's gonna be my friend, and I'm not playing with you, or whatever she was doing. She was irritating. I concur with Beth. And when she does that, the villager guy kind of tries to rape her. It's just a scene that ostensibly is about the song being set up, so he saves her and they run away and there's a song. But honestly, what he was trying to explore was, although technology isn't our best friend, it isn't in our best interest to be regressive either, because our simpler times, they were not as simple as we thought they were. The film's filled with such interesting points that Shankar was trying to make. And for someone who doesn't like Shankar as much, I enjoyed Robot.
I'm afraid my entire criticism of it comes down to, I was bored in the beginning. Like, it kind of picked up later, like once evil Rajini shows up. I thought that was really interesting, the whole temptation angle. But up until then, it was like a huge meh until things got interesting. And once things got interesting, I could kind of stay by it. But, you know, as I've said before, if you lose me at the beginning, it's kind of really hard for me to find my way back into it. I mean, I will try my best and I will eventually do it, but I will always remember that it took an effort.
You mean the talking mosquitoes weren't nice? Oh, I hated the talking mosquitoes.
I did too.
But the movie that you both didn't hate was Love, Sex or Dhoka.
Love it.
That's, oh my god, that's number two, isn't it? After Ishkia. I love that movie. It's so awesome. I think from all the complicated team discussion we just had about Robot, it was fairly simple. It had a very simple point to make about cinema and how it encourages voyeurism in its viewers. And I think it did splendidly. And I love that while he had three different stories to tell, he ended it in that one moment of good, pure happiness that every character enjoys. Everything else after it or before it is all just kind of messy. I love that he circled back to that one point so that at least his film had a happy ending, which was interesting. And also, I really dug the characterization. I was afraid that Beth wouldn't like it. The characters were so localized. The one thing I didn't realize was the themes could carry across even without understanding those characters. And it did, and Beth liked it. It's amazing. I felt gut punched after I watched that film. I was broken up. I couldn't stop thinking about the film and feeling horrible at the same time for at least 2-3 days. But yeah, amazing, amazing film.
I would agree. And the only thing that I would argue with what you just said is that I think that the movie is actually about lots of things. Voyeurism of cinema is definitely a huge part of what's going on in there. But to me, that was kind of only the setup, that it is about that, but it's also about lots of other things. There's that great line in the scene at the end that you're talking about. Although I should also note that the movie actually ends on a song, right? So it's not the last thing that you're really left with is a big splashy performance in your face, just inviting you to stare at it. So that they've created this sort of happiness that is intimate, and then they switch instantly into this showpiece kind of thing. I think there's a character who says something about, well, two of the characters are talking about whether you can take a shortcut or not in life. And that's, to me, the thing that went, yeah, that's what this movie is about. Because I might qualify that if I have 10 minutes to sit here and index them, but most of the characters in this movie, that's what they're doing. They're trying to take a shortcut through life in some way, and it does not work out for them. And I don't know if we want to think of what happens to them as punishment. Like if this were the 70s, you know, and this were a Disa film, we would say, oh yeah, those people have been punished for that. But so I think we could apply that here. But you know, these are people who are trying to get away with doing something the easy way, whether or not that's for good reason or for sort of understandable or noble reasons, or because they're sort of ethically bankrupt people, depends. And that's one of the things that makes it so interesting to think about that particular angle, is there are a lot of different reasons in life that we may try to do things the easy way, the quick way, and there are absolutely horrendous things that can happen as a consequence of that, even if we meant well when we did it. Like there's this theme of, this is what can happen if you try to cheat the system, even if the system is corrupt and you should try to cheat it, or even if the system is based on values that are no longer tenable or oppressive or things like that. But I just think there's a ton going on in this movie. I can't wait to watch it again, and I thought it was amazing.
Debaka Banerjee is quickly becoming a favorite director.
Yeah, and Oy Lucky is my favorite movie of the year that came out, and I can't even believe that's the same filmmaker, because they're so different, but I love them both.
How about Udaan?
I really dug Udaan. So my father was in the army in India, and we grew up in lots of different places, and we've seen these small towns that are completely defined by what happens to be the biggest export or industry of that town. So industrial towns, essentially. Imagine if Detroit was run entirely by Ford, and that would define that city as a kind of a Ford city. And that's where this movie set, which was amazing because that gave it such a sense of place. I think those themes carried through. I liked the sense of place in the film. I liked the acting. I liked how it was bold enough to send a message that's probably not the best message for all kids, that, you know, running away from home is a solution. But damn, was it the right solution in this case? And it was not afraid to send out that message at all, because it was drawing a line on the sand saying, child abuse, we will not stand for it. And for a society like India, that's a big step to take. I like that.
Every time I see these rom-coms made from the Karan Johar stable especially, they always seem to be directed by young men in their 20s who seem to have very little idea of what goes on in a romantic relationship, but have really good references from the movies of Karan Johar or Yash Raj or whatever. The actual romance angle seems to be kind of missing, but what they do handle really well are the parent-child situations. They're usually just a few odd scenes here and there, but those scenes usually carry the film, you know, or they're usually the moments that you remember the most, like in Wake Up Sid, when Ranbir and Anupam Kher have their little tiffs going on, or even the scenes with his mother when he's going through the family album and she remembers how he was always embarrassed to be her son and would always correct her pronunciation and stuff like that. You know, little things like that that seem so much more true to life than any of the romances that they have. And Udaan is far removed from that kind of cinema. It's very much a tiny little movie set in a company town, as you said. And the feel of it is completely different, but I would love to see more of these young men make movies of that sort and sort of explore the entire relationship angle. Because I think in a country like India especially, the whole parent-child situation is so complicated and there are so many stories and we never get to see them, you know. We get to see the whole, the parents who forbid the marriage and you have to rebel against them and stuff like that. But complex stories like these are kind of rare, and if Udaan makes some sort of difference in that, I would be really happy.
I just watched this last night in preparation for this podcast, and I appreciate what you were saying. And I, as I was watching this, I was thinking, I think there's something about the contemporary Indian parent-child context that I don't understand about this film, because to me, it felt quite a bit like I was watching an extremely well-made and well-acted and very male Lifetime movie of the week, because the whole, this sort of kids standing up to their parent and doing something dramatic about it, which sounds horrendously shallow as I'm saying it like that, and I realize that. So I think that there's something about my different cultural context that means I'm not really getting what is impressive about this film in terms of the story and what is actually the message and things like that, because I thought it was well-acted. I thought it looked really interesting. It's sort of an orangey-gray haze that's over everything in the film, which, you know, is obviously a nice touch of showing the industrial nature of the town. I love the stuff about school. That's another good universal theme, I think, is failure at school and pressure to do well at school. Although, again, I know there are big differences in our, you know, our cultural context anyway. So there are a lot of things about it I did appreciate and did like. And I thought the acting was very good. The little boy is just heartbreaking.
Aww, so isn't he just
cute? And he's such a good little actor. And the uncle, who I know I've seen in other films and can't place at the moment, really liked him. But yeah, to me, it was a little cheesy, frankly. But that's because there's stuff I don't know, I think. And that just happens sometimes when I watch Indian films. I'm like, yeah, I realize I'm not getting something here.
That's actually an interesting take, because I thought it was quite competently made. I thought it was one of the most strongly made films in terms of just pure craft, and leave alone what the story was about. But the fact that it didn't strike a chord with you, I think it just struck it with us somewhere down the line that just couldn't carry over.
I think that Americans have seen this movie a lot. And I can't tell you which one, but I just, when I'm watching this, I'm like, well, I know exactly where this is going to go. And I don't think that there's anything...
I mean, when you said Lifetime movie, I was like, oh yeah, I've seen this with the girl. This is like the male take on it.
It's an extremely male movie, isn't it? Did you notice how there are very few sentences actually spoken out loud by women? And I'm wondering what that's about, and whether is that supposed to represent sort of the lack of an emotional core in the father, or what's going on with that? What do you think's going on with that?
Honestly, the reason I thought there was no mom was because they wanted to show why the father is the way he is and why there's nobody to protect the kids. Mm-hmm. The reason I thought there wasn't no other significant female presence in the boy's life is I think this was kind of a little biographical, the film, is what I've read somewhere. So they wanted to stay true to the story or something. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. It was made from a very male point of view. It wasn't, say, Magadhira, but yeah, it was.
I'm not even lobbying that as a criticism. I just noticed it. I'm like, where are the women? I actually noticed it when I was reading the credits at the beginning. I was like,
How about Do Duni Char? Did anybody see it? Because I have.
I'm desperate to. I mean, how can I not want to see that film?
So you must, because although I didn't think the movie was the best this year, I think it was okay. It was an awesome. It was competently made. But Neetu Singh's awesome in it. How can you not watch it?
I mean, I'm always happy to see Neetu Singh. I've just realized over the course of this conversation that I've spent so much of my time watching really bad movies that I haven't actually had a chance to see a couple of really good ones. And that kind of makes me sad. I mean, I have no idea why I've seen Kelly G. Janse and Houseful when I haven't seen Do Duni Char and Love, Sex, or Dhokas. Yeah, so I guess I know now what my New Year's resolution is going to be. So, okay, to wrap things up, three movies that you would recommend from 2010. Simrat?
I'd go with Ishkia, Love, Sex, or Dhokas, and Udaan.
How about you, Beth?
My list is similar. I would say Ishkia, Love, Sex, or Dhokas, and Striker.
I would go with Ishkia, Ravan, and I'm trying to think. Band Baja Bharat, I think.
Yeah, and my list doesn't mean that I don't love Band Baja Bharat or Enderun, which I waxed eloquent about, but really these three films stood out, absolutely.
Okay, now let's do the reverse. What are the films that you want those hours of your life at?
Ooh, Kites, obviously.
Veer for me.
Yeah, oh, yes.
All the comedies. I wish I had seen a single one of them.
I wish I hadn't seen Dabang.
Oh!
It's not the worst film of the year, but it was so nonsensical and wasteful. I want those hours back. It wasn't fun. I watched a film that I didn't care for, and it was a big film that I was excited about and went and saw, and it did nothing with my or anybody else's expectations, I think. That was disappointing.
I think that's really the key. You know, it's not really whether the movie is perfect or not. It's really if it matched your expectations of it or not. I mean, you can actually watch a movie that isn't all that great, but then still feel okay with it because it met your expectations or exceeded them. Or if you somehow ended up having a good experience at the theater, or you saw it in good company or something. I mean, there's just so many little...
There's a lot that goes into how you feel about a film. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that's coming out of our little series on people's cinema going experiences is that I'm hearing all these great stories about how place and the other people around you really influence your experience of a film, because it is sometimes a community experience or a communal experience. And then there are all these other things too, like what did you expect this was going to be like? And for me, because I don't pay particular attention to what's coming out because I never know what I'm going to get to see, I go into most new releases not really knowing anything about them. And, you know, sometimes that is to my detriment because I go and see things like Houseful that I otherwise would have avoided. But sometimes it's just spectacular and I get really excited about something that I had no sense I would
to
like.
To be fair, I did warn you about Houseful.
Did you?
Yes, I did. You went anyway because that theater person is so nice. He brings Hindi films to your city. And so you went and watched it anyway.
Sorry.
You can watch whatever you want. I'm not trying to be your movie watching guardian here, but you know, you knew.
I think you are a little bit, but I appreciate it.
Also, yeah, you know, the way Amrita didn't like People You Like because of all those stupid interviews that Amrita was giving.
I mean, I wouldn't say I didn't like People You Like. I would say that I didn't love it, and whereas it was a movie that I could have loved and I didn't entirely thanks to Aamir Khan. You know, I used to enjoy Aamir Khan until he made Lagaan, and then suddenly it was like he got religion or something. And it's amazing, you know, the same thing happened to Ashutosh Gawarikar, I think. He made little movies, then he made Lagaan, he went flat out and he made a great movie, and then he was like, oh my god, I made Lagaan. And that's exactly what happened to Aamir, you know, he was like, I made Lagaan and look at it, everybody loves it, I must be special. And now they're both bent upon forcing their specialness right down our throats, and I don't enjoy it.
To be honest though, Ashutosh Gawarikar didn't do anything particularly noteworthy before Lagaan, so it's entirely plausible that he feels proud as a peacock about that film.
I think he saw Lagaan and then he kind of fixated about the fact that it became about national pride to a point where now he cannot make a movie that's about anything other than national pride. Like even in What's Your Rashi, it was a cultural tour of India. What is the state of Indian womanhood today? In song for 3 hours. And you're just sitting there thinking, what is wrong with you, you crazy man?
Oh, did he direct that film too? I thought he only produced it. I didn't know he directed this as well.
He did.
Okay, so any last thoughts?
Everyone should watch Ishqiya.
Oh, do we want to mention Tismar Khan?
Tismar Khan, I'm very disappointed in after watching the promos. Previews, they're okay. I mean, in a stupid Akshay Kumar sort of way. But I didn't get the sense that it's a Farah Khan film. And I kind of like her. And the biggest disappointment was the bit where he says that it's okay. No, he doesn't say it's okay. He says that saving a prostitute from getting raped and capturing Tismar Khan are both futile exercises, which kind of is trying to say that raping prostitutes is okay, which I took umbrage against. I don't know. I'm weird that
way. No, that's actually an excellent point. I've been telling Beth, you know, that there's like a disconnect between how people in Bollywood say something and it sounds to them in their head when they say it, and the way it actually comes across to people who are actually listening to them say it. They're like two completely different things. I think when they said that line, they were probably thinking, ah ha ha ha, it's so funny, it's so witty. And then you hear it and you're thinking, there's actually a real problem with trafficking in women and violence against women, and this, and especially in a country like India where things of the sort are anyway underreported, and you'd really don't want that to be a punchline in any movie. So I'm totally on your side in that kind of thing. I'm an eternal optimist. podcast, which you would never think to hear me speak, but I'm still hoping that it would actually work out, because I'm interested to see how far you said earlier, Samrat, that it takes Shah Rukh Khan to make Karan Johar's movies work. And I have a suspicion that it takes Shah Rukh Khan to make Farah Khan's movies work as well. But I would be interested to see how Akshay Kumar fits in there, because I think this just might be his sweet spot, but I'm not sure. Because as you said, the trailers are kind of underwhelming, to say the least.
Yeah, I thought that for Farah Khan films, Shah Rukh Khan did a little bit extra. He was still being Shah Rukh Khan, but he did a little bit extra. But for this film, I don't see Akshay Kumar doing it. I think he's still coasting along on whatever his shtick has become, just being kind of funny generically, but not really. I'm quite scared of this film.
Tera kya hoga, Johnny? Are we excited about that?
I'm excited about the fact that Neil Mukesh seems to be playing a guy called Johnny every year, so that's okay. No, I have no particular thoughts on it, except the fact that it has KK in it, and I kind of enjoy him anyway.
I love him.
Even in bad films?
I love so much. There's like a certain about 4 or 5 character actors in Bollywood, like KK, Irfan Khan, Atul Kulkarni, men that I really seriously crush on because it's so good.
So KK, honestly, is my Hindi version of Alan Rickman. I like him as much. He could do anything and rock it. Kulkarni, I don't enjoy as much. I think he's a good actor, but he's marred by his accent, which is a very West Bombay accent that he doesn't seem to get rid of whatever character he's playing. He plays a hinterland Uttar Pradesh guy in Rang De Basanti. He plays this Assamese guy in this film that I saw this year, which I won't mention because it's not worth mentioning. And he never seems to get rid of that accent, which, you know, for an actor, I don't think that works. You know, which, you know, this is the reason that everybody like Farhan Akhtar as an actor. I don't. He can never get rid of his South Bombay accent. That sick South Bombay accent always stops me from believing that he's this guy from Delhi, or he's this guy who's just doing his job in the small office. He has this really posh South Bombay accent that he never gets rid of. And, you know, he's an actor. Doing different accents is part of the job.
He's a director.
Yeah, you don't even want to get me started about the way people speak. Like Hrithik Roshan, for example, he annoys me no end because he has that same very clipped. It's like Hindi is his second language. There's like a whole bunch of them. They just, you know, that scene in Luck by Chance where Anurag Kashyap is trying to teach, what's her name?
The girl with the face, yeah.
The girl with the face is exactly it.
The girl with the face.
And he's trying to teach her to say her dialogue. I laughed so much in that scene because it's something that's been bugging me for years. And at least with people like Katrina Kaif, I understand why she speaks the way she does. What's the excuse for all the other women in Bollywood and all the other actors in Bollywood?
That's true. Nasiruddin Shah, for example, he plays within his range, but he enunciates. He understands what it is to make people understand what you're trying to say, which, you know, all the other actors, just hard to believe they're just from the same place.
This is Masala Zindabad, the podcast that ought to have been a book. Thank you for listening.